Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shopping it down to business with authors, illustrators, kid-lit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 138 with Michelle Eastman, author of The Legend of the Dust Bunnies, A Fairy's Tale, illustrated by Kevin Richter. Michelle joins me to share insights into the world of self-publishing, having published The Legend of Dust Bunnies herself and gone through extensive research in the process. One of her steps along the way was to increase her presence in social media, and the way she did so, specifically through founding the picture book Pass It On, it's pretty spectacular. If you like what you hear, I encourage you to download other episodes of Let's Get Busy on your computer or handheld device through your preferred podcast host or by visiting the Let's Get Busy homepage directly. Rating the podcast through stars or reviews on iTunes actually helps the podcast reach a greater audience, which also translates to iTunes recommending Let's Get Busy to other listeners, which is a very good thing. Definitely do that if you want to help bring the chats to even more ears. And on that note, it's time to start episode number 138 of the podcast with Michelle Eastman. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Michelle Eastman. I am excited to be talking to you today.
Thank you so much for having me. I am just as excited as you are.
Michelle, I'm glad that we connected. And you are a person that, I gotta say, you're doing a lot of things right. And when I say that, Michelle, because we didn't talk about this previously, and so I'm sorry if I'm catching you off guard, but I talk to a lot of authors and illustrators about this relationship that we have with librarians and authors and illustrators and how it's such a great, like, mutual admiration society and how we can really serve each other well, but that it's a delicate relationship, right? Because ultimately, you want to get your book into the hands of children, and I want to get good books in front of my readers, but how you do that without coming across too salesman-y, that's a verb, right? An adjective, right?
It can be for us.
How you do that is tricky, but you did it the right way when you approached me, and it's something that I think that's why it's led to us having the relationship that we do now, talking now. That since I've met you, you've been really authentic and non-pushy, but it's been very clear to me that you've had your heart in the right place, both with knowing me and who I am, but also with wanting sincerely to connect with your readers. And that's an important thing, Michelle. So I guess before we even get started talking about your book, I wanted to say how appreciative I am of you being that genuine with me from the first step out of the gate.
Well, you're welcome. And I take that as a compliment. I think most of that can be attributed to being born and raised in the Midwest, where
we are
kind of taught to not ask things of other people. Like, it's not in my nature to ask anybody for help with anything. It's kind of like,
really?
If you're, pick yourself up from your bootstraps and do it yourself. But I learned really early on in this whole process that, like you said, if I want to write a book for myself and sit home and read it with my son, that's great. But if I want this book to get out to kids and families, get it out there, I do have to put myself out there, and it is uncomfortable, and I don't want to say embarrassing, but like I get ignored a lot. I'll send someone a message and say, "Hey, this is I have this great book, and I'm really excited about it," and it's radio silence. I'm like, did the email ever get to the, but I've learned to just take all that in stride. And I try, like you said, we were talking earlier before we were, on the podcast, that the world of, children's book authors and librarians and just people that are excited about children's literature, I have not experienced a nicer, more giving group of people. I just haven't. It's wonderful that people from literally all over the world can talk to each other and be excited about the same things and give each other advice and tips, and there, you would expect that since you're all sort of trying to do the same thing in this really overflooded market, that
you're technically competing. Technically.
Yes, but you would never know that with the people I've encountered anyway. They're happy to help you however they can. And I am delighted whenever I can help someone solve a problem or get to their destination by something I've discovered. And I'm helping an author friend in town get her book published right now. So she's been able to learn from some of the mistakes I've made. And I let it all out there. It wasn't an easy process to be a self-published author, which kind of gets into a whole other segue that I could get off on. But it is difficult as a self-published author to be accepted, so to speak, in the traditionally published world. There, it's changing, I guess, a little bit.
The cover story of the New School Library Journal magazine that came out this month was all about self-publishing and the way that it's starting to change publishing.
Yes, and the technology, I think, now has caught up so that someone who strives to make a really well-written and well-produced book is able to do that for an affordable price.
That's true, too. It does come down to production.
It does, and it was a long learning process to acquire all the information to go forward to publish, but I'm glad I took the time to teach myself a lot of those things before I just jumped in.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because it's a lot, and I have a new respect for publishers and editors and all the people involved making one picture book. My hat is off to anyone who takes that task on.
No doubt. Well, just at the top, to say what a loving community this is, it always brings me back to the idea that, one of the things that makes this community work so well and not feel like you're in direct competition with other people is that as much as anybody wants to write a dinosaur book or a fairy book or a graphic novel about some crazy sci-fi fantasy thing or whatever, because each of you are different writers, there's no way that you're going to write the same story.
That's
you might have the same idea, but like you and I could have the exact same idea and not be able to execute it the same way through our writing just because we can't. We're different. I don't know if it's just strictly that we're different writers or that everything we've ever read informs the stories that we're going to write, all the experiences that we ever had end up informing the stories that you're going to write. Therefore, you and I kind of can't write the same story.
True, true.
As much as people love, we all love Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, but there's a reason why Mo Willems published that book and not any of us. As much as everyone's like, oh, I wish I'm the one that wrote that. Well, yeah, now that you've seen it, you could do it. But that's no different than a magic trick. Once someone shows you a magic trick, you're like, I can do it.
Right.
But it's the idea that someone created that makes you have that wonder for it, that once you see it, you know it's possible. But someone has to envision it first. So there's definitely – I would like to think that quality in it, that we're all rooting for each other because we're all so different, that no one's telling the same story.
No, and I think that is a really excellent point. Also, that we do admire what another person is able to do. So
that's true too.
It's not an envy thing. It's like, wow, that is awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I wish I would have thought of that, but I can still sit back and just completely enjoy what they've created and celebrate it. And
celebrate the way that even when it's as you have an author and an illustrator, the way that the right pairing can elevate a book in such an unexpected way that when you're looking at just the manuscript with just that text on the page and then see the way that those illustrations can transform it, can tell an even deeper story, is just a magical thing. It is.
It is. And I mentioned the illustrator I worked with, Kevin Richter. Speaking of that pairing, I had the manuscript, sent that to him, and what he was able to transform those words into with the things that he brought to it was, I don't have a word to describe the feeling when you are one part of that relationship, and it's exhilarating to see what he envisioned from my words, and it was just working with him was I'm spoiled probably for for life.
Well, Michelle, it's also a testament of to the writers out there. It's a testament of leaving space for the illustrator when you're writing those manuscripts. And there are plenty of writers that have books published that can attest to that, and some that are aspiring that are working on that, are working on leaving space in your vision or not narrowing your vision, however you would say that, so that there is room for it to be a collaboration. Michelle, why don't we stop? Why don't I introduce that you have your debut picture book is called The Legend of Dust Bunnies, A Fairy's Tale. And I would love, as you share that it's self-published, I would love for you to first give the listening audience just a share a little bit about what this book is all about. What goes on in the story here?
Well, I will read the back little blurb and kind of elaborate from there. So, join the Dust Fairies on their messy nighttime adventures and discover how one misfit fairy uses his talent to create something legendary. His story will have families looking at dust bunnies in a new light and may actually give kids an excuse not to clean their rooms. So that's the short view of the book. But the long version is I had the idea that there could be fairies who come out at night and make messes in our houses, spread dust, and these fairies in particular have crumb spitting contests, and they fire soot from their slingshots, and they just make a complete mess of our houses. So for me, it was convenient to have these creatures to blame for my messy house. But the main character, Artie, is kind of a misfit, because while the other fairies are making messes and running amok in the house, he's more reserved and he's not really into the crumb spitting contest and that type of thing. He actually likes to collect little odd bits and tidbits from around the house. So pieces of string and pieces of fuzz or lint, he'll collect these and he hides them because he tries to share them initially with the other fairies. And they have no interest in his hobby. And so he hides these things away. And one night he's very lonely and he gets out his collection and puts them together and sews the different bits and pieces together and creates his very own dust bunny, a literal dust bunny. And so that is the idea of the story. And the legend comes in that in the book, I tell kids that when their mother or father asks them to clean their room, they can explain the legend, because if you find a dust bunny, you are supposed to treat it with care and leave it right where you find it, because often the dust fairies lose track of their bunnies when they're roaming around our house making their messes, and they might leave one behind. So if you leave it there, the dust fairy likely will come back looking for that dust bunny. And so kids can tell their parents they can't have their rooms too tidy and neat, because after all, it would be cruel to remove the dust bunnies.
So did this grow out of any lore that you invented with your son? I know you said you have a child at home. This feels so grounded in a person that has seen her share of dust bunnies.
Yes. And Logan, my son, who's 9 now, did inspire the story and the character of Artie, because Logan, wherever we go, he will find some odd piece of string or a bottle cap or a discarded pen cap. It doesn't matter what it is. He will find it and pick it up, and it must come home and be displayed on his bedroom shelf.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. So he is a pack rat. And you know, I have not discouraged it, I guess. But so that kind of got me thinking about the whole idea of the things that, and in my dedication in the book, I address the fact that Logan sees the beauty in things that most of us would consider trash or junk. And So I kind of went a step further with Artie in that he took things that no one else wanted and created something beautiful. And in the story, at the end, Artie makes designs and creates dust bunnies for each and every fairy. So to this day, all dust fairies have their very own dust bunny, thanks to Artie. And so that kind of was the takeaway message, I guess, is that we all see things differently, and one person's beauty could very well be one person's junk, but it's beautiful to them. And so that's really what got me started, and the crumbs on the kitchen floor and all the things that come with having children. And but when I really started thinking about what really kind of was behind the story, I think Artie probably is really me as a writer, because writers, we collect all these tidbits of information and characters and ideas for stories, and I tucked all these things away for over 20 years. Hmm. And hopefully, I think most authors, the idea is that we take all these things that we collect, little bits and pieces of stories, and if we're really, really lucky, we can sew them together and create something worth sharing with other people. And
Michelle, what brought you, and I'm sorry to step on your words here, but what brought you to going down the path of self-publishing? Is that something that you, that was something you always had in mind to be able to create it sort of just the way you wanted, or just what led you down that path?
It wasn't my initial desire. I didn't know it was possible, frankly, to do that. And I started out the traditional way of writing query letters and researching how that is done. And I just got to the point with researching that, it was almost like creating your resume, really. And I just thought, okay, I can spend the next year polishing this up and sending it out and waiting for replies, or I can figure out a way to get this book made myself. And so once I started researching self-publishing, it was more and more attractive. And the fact that I could produce a good quality hardcover book that in my mind, at the back of my mind, always was, I wanted to be able to donate the book to libraries and schools and have it have a place on their shelf. And so there were things that had to happen with constructing the book to make it be worthy, so to speak, of being on a bookshelf.
As a librarian, thank you for saying that. There's a lot of qualities about your book that I don't even know how else to say this. There was a time when self-published books screamed that they were self-published.
Yes.
Because of low quality, low production quality. The art quality was low. The trim size, the binding, there were just a lot of things that made it look amateurish.
Yeah.
And I think having read that SLJ article and also having talked to you here, there are resources out there to be able to do this right and get it onto, not just get it onto bookshelves because, you know, some person comes into your library and says, oh, I want to donate a copy of this for your library. But also because you're publishing something quality that a librarian can say that they're willing to review it and get it added to their collection. And, you know, that's something that they want to have there, not just that they feel like, oh, you're a community member, I should include that.
Yes.
Let me just put out front that I've had parents offer to donate to me the books that they've written.
Oh, my.
And often, and this is so well-intentioned, it is just a parent that – having spent years reading to their own children, they just felt like they had a story to tell, and so they did a small print run for their friends and family. And often I think those books are appropriate for their friends and family, but they're not written with a quality to reach a wider audience.
Right.
And
that's kind of a slippery slope too.
It is.
I don't ever want to criticize or say something isn't the highest quality, but it's a fact.
It's a fact, right.
And it's a fact with probably every business there is. But, you know, the technology now is there. And if you have the intention from the start,
of making a high quality.
Yes. And to research what it takes to be able to have a library search for your book and, to make it available to bookstores. And those were all things that I had in my mind, not like I want to be able to sell hundreds and thousands of books, but if someone gave me an opportunity to be in their store, my book needed to look like as close to the traditionally published books that they are accustomed to as I could possibly make it.
Right.
And so that was my intention, from the start. And luckily, my book has been welcomed into our local libraries and in also our independent bookstore, a retail store we have here called Learning Post that sells teacher supplies and educational games and toys. And I wouldn't have felt comfortable approaching people like that if I didn't think it was, you know, going to be okay next to the other books they have, you know.
So to be able to have confidence in not only your writing, but also in the production of it is certainly a thing. And then for you to go beyond that and be marketing yourself and have to be reaching out to different kidlit bloggers and different publicity sources to be able to, you know, reach a wider audience beyond, you know, your typical reach of whatever would be considered local anymore. I don't know. We're all online. I don't know what's local anymore.
Right.
But local
to me is being able to walk into our public library and take a selfie.
There you go.
My book on the shelf. I mean, that is the kind of thing that gets me excited. Yeah. And but you were talking about online.
Yeah.
It's been a little more than a year ago that I started the whole putting this book together. And prior to that, my only online presence was posting pictures of my cats and my son on Facebook. So the learning curve has been quite large with Twitter and blogging, and I'm still trying to make sense out of all of these parts.
But the audience that you're reaching and knowing that I think, Michelle, part of it is just showing up, right? The fact that you are on Twitter, that you are available if someone looks for you, or you are on Facebook, or you are somewhere, that's a part of it. And the other half has to be that you're not marketing down people's throats.
No, and that, honestly, when I first started on Twitter, I probably was doing that because I didn't know any better. Right. But the more connections I made with other authors and the more I got the hang of things, I realized that how many people buy a book that someone put on Twitter? Probably not a whole lot of people. Right. But so I pretty early on just decided that I wanted to try to be sharing information that I found interesting and that I thought other authors would find interesting or amusing or, and so on my blog, I blog a lot about picture books and, you know, my own mishaps in that realm and just have made a lot of, like we were talking about earlier, deep connections with people who are passionate about kids and literature and picture books and, just to have people to bounce those ideas off of and share articles and information and, you know, funny quotes and, you know, fun stuff too. Doesn't have to all be serious business, but
it's important to make those real connections. 'Cause as a librarian, you know, speaking from that perspective, it's those real connections that for me that bring authors and illustrators into our schools through, you know, virtual visits, through Skype and Google Hangouts, through, you know, in-person visits, through author visits like that. And that is also then what leads to books being in the hands of children because we've made a connection. I mean, I talk about it all the time. I'm sure the listeners are tired of hearing it, but I talk about it all the time about how it's really hard to know who I should invest my money and time in as a school librarian, because money and time are two commodities that we do not have a lot of to go around.
Right.
So I don't want to bring an author into my school if I don't know that it's going to be a good investment. It's not enough to just like somebody's book. I need to know that when you talk to my kids that you're going to inspire these readers and you're going to know how to engage a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old
yes.
or
that you're not just going to, and you shouldn't, but that you're not just going to market your book to my kids,
yes,
but rather you're going to want to be a part of our day.
Yes.
That's something that it all comes down to relationships. And I don't think, overstate how important it is to build an authentic relationship. And so that's part of what you're doing is just showing up and having real conversations, actually really making friends on Twitter,
yes,
and Facebook. And then when people know you, then they want to support you. It's a natural thing to want,
yes,
to support your friends.
Yes. Yeah. I agree 100%. I think maybe coming from a teaching background, I taught sixth grade, and then I worked at our public television station in a educational capacity. And so maybe I have a little bit more of a teacher attitude where, yeah, I am used to being around kids, and I'm in the schools. I'm volunteering at my son's school a lot now too. And so I maybe have a built-in connection with kids. And so maybe that comes across. I don't know. I think most of the people I've met, authors and people who write for kids, or that I've met just as many, if not more, people who are just passionate about children's literature, and they blog about children's literature, and they tweet, and, you know, it's just connecting with other people, I think, that are passionate about the same things that you are, maybe lends itself to a deeper connection, and kids, you know, that's the common thread, really, I think, for,
yeah, no doubt,
for most all of us that are fanatics about kids books. And I'm,
yeah,
a fanatic about picture books, and I won't go into that whole story, but I think I love picture books so much because as a child I was not read to.
Okay.
I grew up in a house with teenage parents, and books were just not a priority. And once I got into school and could check out books from the library, and my favorite thing of all time was when the bookmobile came into into our neighborhood, and we could check out, you know, board the bus and check out books. But I think I'm overcompensating maybe for picture books not being a part of my my early childhood anyway. So trying to make up for lost time maybe.
So how did, speaking of your love of picture books, how did you get connected with your illustrator, with Kevin Richter?
I posted an ad on a site called eLance. And
eLance.
Yes, it's for freelancers of all different types can go on and place ads or answer ads. And I, speaking of connections, my self-publishing journey really started with a YouTube video that a man named Aaron Peters posted about a picture book that he had written and self-published for his niece. And he was kind enough to post kind of a how-to video, not wanting anyone to buy his how-to book or subscribe to his blog. It was just, I did this. It was a great experience. I want to share it. And like I said, I was completely new to anything that was not Facebook. And so to go on YouTube was like a big thing for me. And there was a button that, you know, said that you could contact him. And I thought to myself, well, I'll contact him, but there's no way I'll ever hear back. And sure enough, he emailed me and we had a lot of back and forth conversations. And he was kind enough to share the fact that he had found his illustrator through eLance, So without that connection, probably none of the rest of this would be happening right now, or it definitely wouldn't have happened in this way, because there's no way a mom from Iowa is going to connect with an illustrator who lives in the UK and he's from South Africa. But I mean, that's not going to happen. So I guess that it goes back to the point that you were making about these genuine connections and people being so supportive and giving. And Aaron was one of the first people who I discovered in that capacity, a stranger who didn't want anything, who just wanted to help a complete stranger. And it was a powerful coincidence that I guess I ran across his video on YouTube. But that was where it all started.
And that's awesome.
I did say,
I'll put a link to that in the show notes. That's great.
Yeah. It's, and Kevin, just working with him, I've never met him. All of our communication has been online, and he is just number one, supremely creative and talented, but is just one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. He's a dad, and he's just a kind guy, and he had the patience of a saint working with me on this book, because I can only imagine his frustration. Probably he's used to working with professional people, and here comes me with this idea for a book, and he was very patient. Let's just say that.
Well, Michelle, it's been great to talk to you about the book that you self-published, but one of the other things that I wanted to make sure we talk about before I let you go tonight, because this is something really cool that you shared with me early on, was the initiative that you have going on, Picture Book Pass It On. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Yes, Picture Book Pass It On. I started really at the same time that I was working on building this book.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was.
My word.
Before we got on the air, we talked about that's kind of the way I approach most things, is take on too much and then figure out how to get it all done. So this was no exception. But the idea was to encourage other people to, number one, recognize a need in their own community for connecting books to kids who need them. And being the force that drives that to make that happen. So finding the need in your community, blogging about it, sharing it, however you go about that, but raise awareness to that need, and then raise books or however you want to help that cause to do that. And then the Picture Book Pass It On part came with anyone who is taking this pledge or challenge, however you want to look at it. I challenged them then to tag a friend, and they now were, you know, charged with repeating the process and passing it on and passing it on and passing it on. And I was really happy that pretty early on, some of the people that I had met online, bloggers and children's authors, were sharing it on their sites and were joining in. And at that time, I didn't have a specific cause that I was directing my efforts to. I just gave examples people might think of, a shelter for battered women to donate books to, and new or gently used books. But in the month of March, I decided I needed probably to find a need in my community and address that specifically. The book was out. It was kind of taking its own steps, and so I could devote more time to the picture book, pass it on. And going back to connections again, at my first book signing event, I was at the Animal Rescue League of Iowa, where I was donating some of the funds to them. And a lady came to the table and asked me to sign the book for the Visiting Nurse Services of Iowa Storybook Project. And there was a lot going on that night, and lots of people and lots of kids and craziness, and PayPal swipers not working. Okay, all kinds of fun things. But she kind of put a thought in my head that I had to table for a little while. But like I said, once the book, I was kind of, it was out there, and it didn't need my full 100% attention anymore. I was able to focus back on the picture book, Pass It On. And so for the month of March, I developed a special initiative called Marching Books to Kids, where I called on people to donate directly and specifically to the Visiting Nurse Services of Iowa Storybook Project. And the Storybook Project, volunteers go to two of our local prisons, and the volunteers work with the inmates. And these are moms, dads, and grandmas, great-grandmas. Not the volunteers, the inmates are grandmas and great-grandmas. The volunteers go and they record the parent reading a book to their child. And every month the child receives that recording and that new book to keep. And it gives the parent and the child something to bond over during their visits. Right. And it serves children birth to 17 years old. So it's...
Oh, I didn't realize you went
out. I didn't either. Wow. When I first started learning about it, I was thinking picture books. Yeah. But they, the older kids, the parents read 15 minutes of a chapter book, and then the next month they read another. And so that's a whole different situation than maybe a parent reading a picture book to a smaller child. So it's an incredible, incredible project. And they are just, that whole staff at VNS is dedicated to these families and to what they do. And that has been the pinnacle of my, my whole journey here is to see books coming to them from all over the country, authors who are signing their books and mailing them in, and who are talking about the project on their blogs and challenging other people to donate. And the people at the VNS Storybook Project have been just absolutely thrilled and overwhelmed, I think, with the amount of, again, you know, strangers. These aren't people in Iowa. They're people from all over who wanted to help this project. And just incredible to think of all the kids who will meet these new authors and these new books that maybe they would not have otherwise. But
I think that's one of the qualities that I like the most about that and about Picture Book Pass It On, is that I think so often we think of just donating the books that we don't want anymore to these shelters and to these schools that don't have as much funding and to things like that. And that, your heart is in the right place if you're doing that. But what these schools and shelters and prisons and whatever need are high quality books. So it's
to purchase books with the intention of wanting to give them to a place like I think all the time. That was we've just gone through celebrating, you know, World Read Aloud Day and different great reading initiatives last month or earlier this month, and it calls me to think about exactly that, about making sure that there's high quality literature as best as we can in our shelters and in our different places of need, that we're not just passing off the stuff that's falling apart,
yes,
or low quality or cheap to buy, but rather trying to put good books into, yes, the hands of these readers.
Exactly. And that that's what they do. And they go through anywhere from 60 to 80 books a month. The coordinator told me. So, I mean, they're going through a lot of books, and so there's clearly a need, and I'm just happy that I get to be a small part of helping them build their library and like you said, getting high quality new books that they're getting that the kids can take home. And like I shared, I grew up in a household that was we had a low income in the house, and my parents were very young, and I didn't have any books in my house. I didn't have a single book. It just was not on the priority list. So I can really relate to kids who, sorry, right now, I can't imagine. I've read to my son since the day we brought him home from the hospital. And I think a lot of us who maybe do have enough, more than enough, we forget that there are people in our own communities who don't, and books aren't on their priority list. And like you mentioned, high quality ones probably are not on their priority list. So to be able to help and give back to families like the one I came from, my parents weren't incarcerated, but my best friend's dad was incarcerated throughout her entire childhood and most of her adulthood. So, I mean, like I said, it's kind of easy to forget that there are populations right in our neighborhoods who really can benefit from a little boost. And, you know, one book really, I think, can make a huge difference to a child. I know it can.
I fully, fully agree with you. And I think that that's something that, especially in libraries, we're seeing that testament day after day, that one book can change the world of a child. Michelle, it's been huge to talk to you tonight. What a pleasure. You've got such a great heart for connecting kids with literature. And I'm glad that not only you're doing the work you're doing through Picture Book Pass It On, but that you've also been able to connect through writing your own book and sharing that with readers. Thank you so much for coming on to talk to me tonight.
You are so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Before I let you go, can I ask one more question?
Yes, and I know what it is. I'm ready.
I'm always giddy to ask this. It's so ridiculous. But, Michelle, I'm assembling an all-star kid-lit dream team kickball tournament, and I'd love to know what one person, alive or past, from the kid-lit world you would want on your team and why.
Okay, I had to pick one for the bench, too. I couldn't choose any. It was between Shel Silverstein and I chose him because I thought he would be the good guy out on the field, because, I mean, he's big and he's bald and he's, like, intimidating. And when I started doing a little more research about him, I found out that he was in the U.S. Army, and he's a guy from the Midwest, so I figured, hey, he's a natural for my team. But William Steig is going to be my bench warmer, just because I think he would freak kids out in a different way, and the things he writes are just so crazy and inappropriate and fabulously weird. But when I researched a little bit about him, I found out that he was an All-American water polo champion. So I
figured, didn't know that.
Any dude that can live to 95 years old and have been a water polo champion deserved a spot on this team.
Those are some wise choices, Michelle. Well done. Well done. Cool. Well, it was a pleasure to have you come on. And again, I'm excited for more people to investigate Picture Book, Pass It On. I'll make sure I attach the link to your Facebook page. That's great. And I hope people feel so moved to get involved, whether that means donating books or finding ways for, if you're a teacher or a librarian, for your students to connect literature to different organizations in your own communities. And I'm also excited for people to know about the legend of Dust Bunnies, a fairy's tale, and maybe even to invite you into Skype and read to their children as you did with my students. I really like that.
I would love to do that. That's the best part of this job is the kids. They're the best fans, and I'm always happy to meet new little faces, whether it's in person or over Skype, and that sounds great.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes through stars or reviews. Doing so not only gives me helpful feedback, it also helps to bring new listeners to the podcast, and that's a very good thing.
We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.